It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Here's some good news. According to the Pittsburgh Today annual regional report, the total population of southwestern Pennsylvania is slowly but steadily rising, and the region's economy continues to improve. But now the bad news. The area's diversity lags behind comparable metropolitan areas, and the ozone air pollution and the rate of people who smoke are issues of concern here. We've talked about the diversity issue, but it's a consistent trend. So what will it take to make the necessary changes to advance Pittsburgh in the 21st century? I'm joined now in Studio A by Douglas Hoik, director of Pittsburgh Today, which is part of the University of Pittsburgh's University Center for Social and Urban Research. Doug Hoik, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me.
And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. Have you lived in cities other than Pittsburgh? How does it compare? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Doug Hoik, what were the benchmark regions used in the study, and how did you decide to use them?
Well, we started years ago, we started a predecessor project at the Post-Gazette called PG Benchmarks. And at that time, we were going to choose 15 regions. We looked at the top 25 regions, and we found that we had very little in common with the top 10. We lopped those off, and of the next 15, Pittsburgh was right in the middle in terms of population. For Pittsburgh Today, John Craig, who got this started, looked at regions that had similarities in some geography, some industrial mix. They range from Boston and Philadelphia on the east to Detroit, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Richmond, Charlotte, places that have some kind of overlapping similarities.
And the area's diversity, it lags behind other comparable metropolitan areas, the ones that you mentioned. And this is not anything that's really new, is it? In fact, we seem to be rehashing a lot of the same problems, including the air quality, the health issues, and all of those.
Yeah. Some of these things are very hard to change. Demographic, racial and diversity, these issues are difficult. You can't just kind of flip a switch. Diversity issues are considered to be very important for the region's largest employers, for one thing. In order to compete in a global economy, they want to have a diverse group of workers. And in order for them to be able to recruit and retain these people, they need to feel welcome here. So we are typically the whitest of our benchmark regions. And so this is something, we have an African-American population that's relatively sizable, but in terms of, Hispanic, we're very small. Same with Asian. Those two groups are growing, but they start from such a low point that the growth is still, by comparison, pretty small.
So what will it take then to make the necessary changes to advance Pittsburgh in the 21st century?
So this is something that we're actually working on a project right now with Vibrant Pittsburgh to really highlight diversity in the workforce, and it's something that will be coming out later in the year. Education is certainly one element. In regard to changing, and we're going to be looking at how people of various races are doing in their jobs, their wage levels, et cetera, how you change a region is a matter of public education. It's a matter of becoming, to some degree, conscious of the desire to change. It will take time. We have a story in this Pittsburgh Today and Tomorrow report looking at immigrants and how do we attract them. We have, among the benchmark regions, the smallest percentage of foreign-born residents, just over 3%. We used to have much more than that 100 years ago when the mills, et cetera, were booming. So part of the story looks at cities that are embarking on campaigns, and they have a variety of strategies. One, for instance, in Dayton, Ohio, they actually have the police stop people only when there's, a visible infraction. That's one extreme. The other is to just make a conscious community effort, and it can kind of flower on a number of fronts, to make people more welcome. When you have somebody who comes here and likes it, They may bring their family, et cetera, et cetera, and it builds. Interestingly, on that regard, we have, though we have the smallest percentage of foreign-born residents, we have the most highly educated percentage of any city in the country. While that sounds great, what it really means is we're just getting the people who are coming here for good jobs, and we're not getting kind of the natural immigration, the overflow. Part of that's, you know, we're not a coastal city, and so it's something that a lot of inland cities face. But it's a challenge that requires people to face it and figure it out.
And, I mean, some other population hang-ups that Pittsburgh faces have been in place for decades. Does that mean that it will take more transplants in leadership positions to make the necessary changes to advance Pittsburgh?
Well, it always helps to have people in leadership positions who, you know, so to speak, look like you. I suspect that's something that is relatively on the easier side to do. It's something that's important to do, but to get the numbers, a variety of strategies, a lot of which are covered in this interesting story, are necessary. In terms of population, we had declining population for many years, stemming back to 1983 when the mills were closing and unemployment was 18-point-something%.
And well, does that factor into it too? That 100 years ago, you talked about how diverse the population was then, and people were coming here to get jobs and work in the mills. Does it take something like that? Have we found what is necessary to replace the steel mills? And if so, is that the magnet for attracting a diverse population?
Sure. Well, jobs is a critical point. 100 years ago, Carnegie was hiring steamers, you know, from various places to bring people here. It's not that kind of boom, but the fact is our unemployment rate has been relatively beneath the benchmark and national averages for 5 or 6 years. So when you have jobs, it takes time and people get the idea, oh, that's a good place to live. I can get a job there. The cost of living is low. The people we have moving in tend to be younger. They're not underwater in a mortgage somewhere. They're more mobile. They're going to come here for jobs. And that's what we've been seeing. That will continue. I think Pittsburgh is well poised and well placed to continue doing relatively better than other places economically. And in time, that is going to build the diversity and the younger nature of this area. But to make a bigger difference, probably innovative things will have to be tried. Some may succeed. Some may fail. You have to just keep trying.
We're talking with Doug Hoik. He is director of Pittsburgh Today, part of the University of Pittsburgh's University Center for Social and Urban Research, about their annual report looking at the total population of southwestern Pennsylvania, looking at how Pittsburgh stacks up against other comparable-sized cities in the United States in terms of things like, among others, diversity, which seems to be lacking. And we have a tweet from Ben who says he responded to our question that we asked, which is, have you lived in cities other than Pittsburgh, and how does it compare? Ben says, so much I love about this region, aesthetics, affordability, people, so much irks me, race relations, provinciality, people.
That's right.
If Pittsburgh makes some of the necessary changes to attract, as you say, younger residents and a more diverse population, must it also do things to keep its unique flavor and not become a cookie cutter city? What does it have to do to avoid looking like well, I don't want to give an example because I don't want to offend anybody. But
sure. Well, first of all, we're not likely to become a booming high population growth area. I mean, that's just not – we're not Sunbelt. That's not likely to happen, which would suddenly change our character overnight. In terms of what kind of people are most likely to come here, they're probably people who are attracted by the charms we have to offer. So my suspicion would be that over time we're likely to attract people who like what we have to offer. So I wouldn't see the complexion changing dramatically. Our job growth has been – essentially slow and steady, which has been better than most regions. That doesn't create the kind of boom, although frankly we have seen a boom in energy and Marcellus shale related, even though it's offset by the fact that it came during the teeth of the recession. So I don't think we're going to see dramatic kind of changes. The question is how to incrementally build more diversity, and it's something that a variety of groups are working on. And again, we'll have a report later on that this year.
412-246-2002 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation with Doug Hoik. And again, the question we've put out there is, have you lived in other cities, cities other than Pittsburgh? How does Pittsburgh compare with the other cities that you have lived in? And we have Daniel tweeting that, I've lived in other cities, loved the people in hometown Pittsburgh. Public transit infrastructure, however, leave much to be desired. And he goes on to say, the biggest obstacle to serious growth and more college grads staying is the necessity of having a car. Bus system has serious issues. And again, that's a tweet from Daniel. And when you go to other cities, Seattle is one that comes to mind. They have a mass transit system that really makes it possible for you to not have a car. If you live in the city of Seattle, you don't need a car to get around. That's not necessarily true of Pittsburgh. How much of a problem is that, Doug?
Well, we did about, 18 months ago, we did a number of focus groups. We did a big report on young adults and to dispel a lot of myths. And in these focus groups, these young adults, transportation and transit was the key issue. It's something they want. It's something they expect of a regular city. That's one of their definitions of a city. And we suffered the last several years when there were no funding bills coming out of Harrisburg. There were a lot of efforts to try and get the legislators to pass it. And finally, they did for bridges and roads and transit at the end of last year. So that'll make a big difference. We won't be facing the kind of cuts that we thought we were going to be facing this fall, which would have left everybody having to commute downtown and not enough traffic or parking places. Having said that, we are relatively much better off than a lot of regions. We've kind of scraped and clawed our way back from 30 years of questionable, position and really treading water. We are going to be, I believe, in a position of relative strength, and this is one of the issues that we really need to continue to augment if we want to kind of further the distance between us and other cities.
We have another tweet from Pat who says, I grew up in Kansas City. To me, they are comparable to each other. I've been to Kansas City. I'm not sure if there are tons of similarities, but I suppose there are some. Was this, in fact, one of the cities in the study?
Kansas City, no. It was one of the ones we looked at in the predecessor benchmark project 10, 15 years ago. I saw the biggest thunderstorm I've ever seen in Kansas City. Some degree, Kansas City clearly Midwestern, Pittsburgh semi-Midwestern. I don't know in terms of the industrial mix, I would suggest that they're probably fairly different. Big eds and meds center here, big educational center, which is really spurring a lot of innovation, which is considered to be one of our strong points and a real key for the future. Certainly not the kind of massive heavy industry we had here historically.
412-246-2002 if you'd like to take part in our discussion. And we welcome more Twitter comments. And you can also reach us on our email address, which is esspgh@wesa.fm. Among the topics covered in your report, Doug, is the immigration gap, as it's been called, in southwestern Pennsylvania. What kind of a gap are we talking about here? What is the immigration gap?
Well, we're just not getting the kind of natural flow of people, kind of the over-the-transom immigrants. Again, they're coming for good jobs. That is, interestingly enough, the Bhutanese population has been one of the biggest growers here. Some of that stems from refugees. And once people get a foothold, they send word home and say, hey, come over here. And we have a feature on a young man whose family, he's brought them over. The gap there is that we have relatively few foreign-born people compared to other places. And a lot of that—
How big is that gap?
Well, I mean, we're at, again, 3.3%. And the benchmark average, which I can tell you in about 1 second, is considerably higher. Bear with me.
And again, some of the places that are in the study are cities like—
Yeah, Boston, for instance, 16.7% of their people are foreign-born. The average is 8% among our benchmark regions. It's something that, again, the growing economy will help. we want to be a place where, you know, for the global economy, where we have the welcome mat open. Over the last 30 years, when there's been a lot of immigration, another factor is that we had a relatively moribund economy. There wasn't the kind of bubbling economy that brought people. That's been changing over the last 5 years.
What is the primary thing, in your opinion? You know, we've heard people say transportation, and you talked about it earlier. Jobs certainly is also important. When it comes to Pittsburgh competing, bringing in the best and the brightest people, and creating the best job opportunities, creating diversity, and also expanding the city in terms of modern technology to the point where we are as technically fit as any city in the 21st century. What do you think is the primary thing that will accomplish that?
I believe quality of life, which is a broad category, is really important. We're seeing I'll just mention two areas. Government. We've done well over the last, you know, half decade without necessarily having the government that is really leading the way. Now with Rich Fitzgerald and Bill Peduto, we're well poised to really make a lot of advances in that regard. The other thing I think is environment. People want to live in a place that's healthy. And though part of our air quality is now in attainment for the first time in years, those standards will be stricter again, and we're expected not to be in attainment. So having good air quality, that's something that the Heinz Endowments through the Breathe Project has been working on. It's something that we need to continue to improve.
Why do we know why we're having the problems that we are with our air? Because, the steel industry years ago, decades ago, during the 70s, for example, when the mills were still all going, you would see on the television news, for example, on the weather, they'd have the air pollution index for the day. And that's gone now. You don't see that anymore. There isn't this measurable smoke and stench in the air, and yet it's still a problem. Why?
Well, you can't see it as much. We still get some of the air alert days. So the problem is some of the air pollution comes in from power plants to our west. It blows in on the prevailing westerlies. We still have, however, a number of big coke plants that are major polluters in Clairton, Liberty Borough, and on Neville Island. You put that together with things such as driving. I mean, we do produce a good amount of it, just, you know, all of us together. There's still the industrial part. You need something like national legislation to work on the stuff coming from the West. But in terms of, you know, we have major polluters here who are still, you know, in violation of the Clean Air Act. And individuals, we did a survey last year on the environment. It's interesting that I believe it was only a third of the people really felt they had any effect. Now, clearly, people can have a big effect in a number of ways on the environment, but they don't feel that they can, and therefore, I think they probably don't make a lot of effort.
We have a tweet from Julian who says, how can we make more affordable housing available? Rents are getting higher to keep up with construction costs. And you mentioned that this is an affordable city, which relatively speaking, it is. And I'm sure you found that in your study. However, the issue of being able to buy a house at an affordable price for middle-income people is becoming more of a challenge. What about that?
Well, in cost of living measures, housing is a big component. And frankly, it's our housing, relatively low housing price, that keeps our cost of living rating overall very low. So we are considered, compared to these other regions, a low cost of living place for housing. Now,
Yet you still hear from people like Julian who say that there's a lack of affordable housing.
Well, and there may well be. We're looking at, you know, macro 50,000 feet kind of look at a metro area. Undoubtedly, there are places where housing is more expensive and less expensive. And it also likely is the case that with apartments, you've had a big influx of companies who have not been able to make money in other ways looking at turning single-family homes into apartments, because with the whole housing bubble crisis of several years ago, the notion that everyone should be a homeowner is kind of fading away. And so you have a much bigger population of renters for relatively less stock. And so that may be one reason why some apartment prices are higher.
We recently spoke with Mayor Peduto about his selection of a diverse cabinet and how that should reflect the future of Pittsburgh. Do you think that this could be a means of attracting and retaining a diverse population?
I think that examples from government are really important. They put Pittsburgh in the spotlight for doing things that are either terrible or great, depending on what happens. And with Mayor Peduto and the Talent City episode through the Pittsburgh Foundation, bringing in the best and brightest, this is a great example. He's not, you know, giving away jobs through patronage or, you know, donors. He wants the best people. This kind of thing, a city, while the city population is maybe, you know, something over 10% of the, maybe 15% of the regional population, the city as the primary government agent can be a kind of a symbolic leader, and that's very important because it gets press, it gets local press for people here showing them we can do things better, and it gets national press, which has a bundle of, if it's good news, a bundle of benefits for us.
We're just about out of time, so I'm going to ask for two short answers to a couple of last questions. One, what is the primary thing Pittsburgh must change to compete nationally?
Well, I think transit, I would say transit and air quality being more difficult to change.
And what is the primary thing that Pittsburgh must keep to win nationally?
Innovation, continuing the innovation, widening the gap. We have a big anomalous kind of ace in the hole with our foundations, which spurs so many things. And this is one of the things that I think is going to distance us from other regions.
Doug Hoik is director of Pittsburgh Today. We've been discussing the annual report revealing Pittsburgh's standing among similar U.S. cities. Doug, it's been a pleasure. Thank you as always for visiting with us.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
Coming up, remembering the legendary Porky Chedwick when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.